I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided.
Palestine will be free.
Pro-Israel and pro-Palestine protesters clash in Kirkland. Plus, what's the line between showing sympathy for Palestinians and being an apologist for terrorists?
When you frame a story with that kind of photo, the intent is pretty clear.
And the expected result of ignoring our public safety crisis in the name of ideology. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Support the show for $5 a month at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you all so much for your well wishes for my sister Miranda. I do have some updates on how she's doing. I'll get to that later in the show, but I did want to extend my sincere appreciation for your understanding for us taking a few days off the show and for all your thoughts and prayers on her condition. So I'll update you guys later, but there's a lot of pain and hurt happening elsewhere in the world. So we want to get right into, of course, what's happening in Israel. When Ukraine happened, you know, the war in Ukraine, and there's been so many other instances of really just horrifying and heartbreaking images that, you know, are truly a shock to the senses and to our sense of humanity. And I've got to say, you know, the images coming out of what happened in Israel in the terror attack on Israel by Hamas is awful. I mean, some of the worst images that I've ever seen. And I know for the news, it's almost hard to illustrate just how horrible this attack was, because there's so many videos and photos that simply are not fit to put on TV and that you'll really only see if you go on social media. I mean, just heartbreaking, the stories coming out of, you know, the music festival that these young people were at, and to watch Hamas terrorists, you know, parachuting in and opening fire, and the videos of women who've been raped and beaten and brutalized, you know, being paraded through the streets, and to hear from their families. I mean, truly one of the most horrendous things that I've ever seen, certainly. And so we're going to talk a lot about that. Our friend Jason Rantz is going to be joining us coming up to talk about some of the messaging that the media has had around this that has left him really scratching his head and has been very divisive. But this is also manifested in division at home in the United States. Over the weekend, there were multiple protests and clashes between pro-Israel and quote-unquote pro-Palestine demonstrators, one of them in Kirkland. You know, I have seen pro-Palestine protesters before in Kirkland, just a couple, you know, holding up signs. I've certainly seen that in Seattle, but the numbers were large, even in Kirkland, and of course elsewhere across the country, in New York. There are quite a few clashes as well. Both our friend Jason Rantz and Jonathan Cho were in Kirkland covering what was happening. Again, I said Jason Rantz will join us coming up momentarily to talk about what he saw and what he heard, and also what he really views as anti-Semitism that he saw on display on the streets of Washington State, but also anti-Semitism that he says has been fostered by statements from our members of Congress in Washington State. And then this Seattle Times headline that, it's not so much the headline, it was the picture. And I saw our friend Ari Hoffman who shared it, and I'll read what he wrote momentarily, but let me just explain the picture that the Seattle Times chose to put on its front page, massive, right under the Seattle Times logo. You know, at first glance, you wouldn't, I mean, think much of it in the context of what's happening, but it shows a young boy, and he's carrying what looks to be a computer out of some rubble, and the description, it's an Associated Press, or it's a New York Times article. A child carries family belongings after Israeli warplanes bombed Gaza City on the Gaza Strip on Sunday. So Ari Hoffman shared that, and he said, "Women at festivals were raped and murdered, and their bodies were paraded through the streets by terrorists. Jewish children are being executed in front of their parents, but the Seattle Times is trying to make you feel bad for terrorists in Gaza who started this. Cancel your subscription." And this is going to be central to the conversation that I wanted to have with Jason about it, because here you have, again, the Seattle Times choosing a photo of a child in the rubble that's left behind. And of course, your heart is immediately sympathetic for any child in that situation. But what Ari Hoffman is saying is, you know, this is a child in Gaza, and here you have all these atrocities committed against Israelis. And the Seattle Times is choosing to picture destruction and a child amidst that destruction in Gaza. And so, you know, a question that I had in my mind as we have these conversations around what's happening there is, you know, what is the line between, okay, you feel sympathetic for these quote unquote Palestinians versus, as a humanity, you know, people who aren't terrorists, who aren't part of Hamas, versus, you know, when are you just being an apologist for terrorists? And where is the line there? And so Jason and I will talk about that momentarily. But another angle of this story that I think is pertinent for everyone to be paying attention to, and that we're going to talk about at length on the show, is whether the threat of Hamas and terrorist acts in the United States is something that ought to be at the top of our administration's radar. You know, we've mentioned this on the show, and we talk a lot about issues at the southern border, and we talk about them in the context of how are they going to impact us in Washington State and our national security, our security domestically. One of the things we talk a lot about is the fentanyl crisis and how you have so many Democrats completely ignoring the security issue at the southern border. Well, where is the fentanyl coming from? Up through the southern border into our communities, and it's killing people. And another thing that just baffles me, why some on the left refuse to really prioritize security at the southern border, is there's been headlines for years about people on the terror watch lists coming up through the southern border. And we know that there have been, you know, hundreds of them who've been captured at the southern border, who've been caught by border security. And again, there's been headline after headline for years and years about this. And then you think about, well, how many have gotten away? And so there's this real fear, and I think it's justified, that Hamas terror cells have already infiltrated the U.S. through the southern border. And certainly Hamas has an anti-United States sentiment. And so that's a real question and concern, I think, that the administration needs to take seriously in the coming weeks and months, which is, do you have Hamas sympathizers or Hamas terrorist cells who, because of our poor southern border, where just anyone can walk in, are now living among us, just lying in wait? And Bill Malusian with Fox News, who's been, you know, doing just awesome work at the southern border, he, and I imagine this is why, felt the need to put out how big of an issue this has become. He said, Border Patrol arrests of suspects on the FBI's terror watch list at the southern border. And he started in fiscal year 2017. There was just two. There were two arrests of people on the terror watch list at the southern border. In 2018, that rose to six. 2019, it was none. 2020, three. 2021, 15. 2022, 98. In fiscal year 2023 to date, there have been 151. If that doesn't scare the hell out of you in terms of what these people are doing coming into the United States, and again, I would argue, and Bill Malusian noted this, he said there's also been over 1.5 million known gotaways since the start of 2021, enough to fill 16 Rose Bowls. So that means that 105 million people, the Border Patrol believes, have crossed the U.S. Border to Mexico into the U.S., and they just got away. You know, maybe they saw them on cameras, for instance. A lot of private properties have cameras. So you want to guess how many of those 1.5 million were terrorists or were individuals who wished to do harm to the United States? I mean, we really could only guess at this point. And so it's certainly something that the administration should be talking about. And if they're not acting with urgency to secure our southern border, to make sure that what's happening overseas right now doesn't find its way to U.S. soil, then I don't know, you know, what level of incompetence Biden has, but that has to be at the top of the list in front of our minds as we look at what's happening. As I mentioned, we're going to get to my conversation with Jason Rantz about what he saw unfold on the streets of Kirkland and what he really views as anti-Semitism that has been propped up by members of Congress. And then later on, we're going to talk about where's Biden. The title of our episode today is Put a Lid on It, because the president of the United States for the second day in a row has declared a lid, which means that we're not going to hear from him. We're not going to see him. He's not going to come out and make any statements from the media. And you have to wonder how that makes us look on the national stage. We'll get to that coming up next. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. And can I just say really quickly, our sponsors are wonderful. You know, I took the week off the show and they've been reaching out with their thoughts. And for them, I just so appreciative of them as well to give us a little space this past week. We've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, wonderful real estate in our area, agent in our area. He's been doing this for a really long time. He and his team have some innovative marketing strategies to make sure that not only once you decide to list your home, do you get the most possible eyeballs on that listing, but that your home is ready when it hits the market. We asked him what his advice would be to people who are considering putting their home on the market.
Oh, I think the first step is having an idea of maybe what your home is worth, you know, and having that kind of baseline home value. And that's something that we can do complimentary. You can go to the website, sellwithwest.com. You just plug in your address and we'll get you a value range. And if you want, and if you're serious, you know, I'll come out and do a quick, you know, market analysis for you. That's all complimentary. And then at that time or another time, we could walk through the basic steps of what it would take to get your home ready for the market.
So if that's something you're interested in, my advice would be just go to sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. Hey, check out a few real estate agents, but don't decide on one until you visit sellwithwest.com. You can start by simply using their home value calculator, plug in your address, find out how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, when there were clashes, again, across the country, but there was a pretty intense one in Kirkland, Washington, of all places, between pro-Israel and quote-unquote pro-Palestine protesters, and things got pretty severe, and our friend Jason Rance was actually on the ground for it. So we invited him to come on the show to talk about what he saw and also to talk about the bigger picture here and how the United States should be postured. Jason, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you were there on the ground in Kirkland. What did you make, first of all, just the number of people who showed up to a protest on this in Kirkland of all places?
So I can't say that I'm necessarily surprised, as people might know, I'm Jewish. I cover anti-Semitism on my show. And so I'm pretty aware of the anti-Semitism problem that we have in Western Washington. It's masqueraded as being quote unquote pro-Palestinian or pro-Palestine. Palestine doesn't exist. And so when people say pro-Palestine, what they mean is they don't believe Israel has the right to exist on that land. So when I showed up, I guess I wasn't surprised. It was disturbing. I'm always disturbed when I see these kinds of things. And I generally get more disturbed by the way the media covers them. I was looking at some of the coverage and they're giving equal treatment to both sides, which is absurd. They somehow decided not to play clips of them chanting what they chanted, which is from river to the sea. They were talking about supporting an intifada. I mean, they were calling essentially for the destruction of Israel. They were pro-Hamas. That's different from being quote-unquote pro-Palestinian. I don't know anyone who's like not pro-Palestinian as a human being, right? They're pro-Hamas. They were supporting terrorism the weekend after hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of innocent civilian Israelis were raped, murdered, and or kidnapped. So please spare me that this was like a quote-unquote protest. It was a celebration of dead Jews. And any media outlet that tells you otherwise is not giving you the truth.
Yeah, and we talked just a moment ago about the Seattle Times front page. And, you know, when we talk about this, the question I'm going to have for you, but I want to set it up by talking about the Seattle Times picture, is sort of what is the line for you between being quote unquote pro-Palestine and just being an apologist for terrorists? So the picture that the Seattle Times chose is a young boy, right? And he's got some of his family's belongings. And this is the wreckage of an Israeli bomb strike in Gaza. So when I look at that picture, it's like, well, of course, I have sympathy for that young boy. You know, he's not a Hamas terrorist, to the best of my knowledge. But for you, where is the line between, like I said, being sympathetic for these people who are not members of Hamas and being an apologist for terrorism?
Well, it's the way that it's all framed, right? I think that when you frame a story with that kind of photo, the intent is pretty clear. They could have just as easily shown the dead or injured or suffering Israelis who were the victims of terrorism, but they didn't do that. What they did was show you a quote-unquote victim of Israeli aggression. So that's the difference between being sympathetic versus being anti-Israel or anti-war, whatever it is they want to try to spin this into being. I think at the end of the day, You could have shown also some images of the Hamas headquarters or Hamas weapons bins. Like, there are so much other things. They chose this on purpose, and they do this often. It's a very sneaky and subtle way to get around being fair towards Israel. Again, I'm not necessarily shocked. I'm just waiting for that Naomi Ishisaka column about the plight of Gazans.
I don't really know a good way to put this question, but when I looked at some of your video from yesterday, and when I've looked at video from other protests across the United States, and I see some of the people who are on the quote unquote pro-Palestine side, I really have a hard time believing that they actually know what they're talking about, or that they just showed up because they needed to be contrarians. Did you get that sense while you were there?
It depends. I mean, maybe for some of the white ones, like the white progressive dude and woman who show up to all of these events, I find it always humorous. In this case, there were two white women who were holding hands. They were a lesbian couple, and they were on the side of the pro-Hamas group. You go to Gaza, you will be thrown from the nearest building. They'll take you to the rooftop and they'll throw you down if you're holding hands with your girlfriend, or if you insist that they refer to you as they or zur. So they're clearly on the wrong side, but it's the quote unquote progressive position to take. They are told that Israel is an oppressor and that the Palestinian people are the oppressed. And so that to them, that's it. There's no nuance in their role on their side of things. They just, you're either oppressor or oppressed. And because Jews are seen as privileged and white and powerful, they're automatically the enemy. Now, for the other folks, they just don't like Jews. We can pretend all we want. I love how people want to pretend, but I don't know how else to put it when after Jews are slaughtered and raped that you celebrate. Seems odd to me.
How much do you think people like Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal have contributed to that sentiment in the United States?
In a big way, she's also an anti-Semite. She partners with anti-Semites who are like overtly anti-Semitic, with Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. She defends them all the time. She was one of the few members of Congress to vote against condemning the boycott, divest, sanction movement, which again is an anti-Semitic movement that solely blames Israel for the ills of everything in the Middle East. She was someone who just recently used the language to describe the entirety of Israel as a racist state. This is a common comment from or criticism coming from the anti-Semitic side of things. There's a difference between being critical of Israeli policy, and they'll often tell you that, right? When you call someone out, they'll say, "Oh, what? You can't criticize Israel's policy or government." Well, when the only policies you criticize are the ones concerning their survival as a nation and the right to defend itself, then you're not going after Israel policy, you're going after Israel. If you want to go after policy, go ahead and cite the policy. They can't do that because that's not what they're concerned with.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this has been a, 70-year conflict that has had, ups and downs. How significantly, though, do you think this attack on Israel sets back any hopes of sort of meaningful negotiations toward peace?
There shouldn't be any. Not with Hamas. There shouldn't be any with Hamas. They're a terrorist organization. You don't seek peace with a terrorist group that wants to see you not survive, that quite literally is built around your destruction. There was never going to be any peace with those folks. Could there be peace in the region with other countries? Sure, so long as it's not Iran, which also wants to destroy Israel. You've seen some inroads being made with Saudi Arabia, maybe a little bit with Egypt to a point, but not with Hamas. You cannot reason with these monsters, and that's precisely what they are. And each and every one of them needs to be wiped from the face of this earth.
Speaking of Hamas, and I'll end here, there have been some concerns that, and we've seen the headlines, right, that members of the terrorist watch list have been captured at the southern border with the US and Mexico. I mean, Lord knows how many haven't. And I've seen some concerns, particularly among conservative circles, that there might already be, Hamas terrorist cells in the US who have come up through the southern border already. How big of a concern, and how is that? How close are you watching that?
It should be a huge concern, not even just for Hamas, but for anyone who's coming into this country unvetted. You have no clue who these folks are. And you can put your head in the sand, I guess, and pretend we don't have any enemies, that people don't want to do us harm, or that, God forbid, anyone would come into this country illegally with the intent to break the law further. But you're just fooling yourselves if you think that that's the reality. We know as a matter of fact that some people who shouldn't be in this country, who are criminals, who are on terror watch lists, are in fact trying to come over. So if we're catching them, think about all the people that we're not catching. Think about the tens of thousands each and every month that are known gotaways. Just imagine that. It takes one time for a terrorist to get through and commit an act of terror to be successful. We have to be successful in stopping them and catching them 100% of the time. That's it. Those are not great odds. And we make the odds even worse when we're essentially inviting them to come into this country illegally.
All right, Jason, and we're going to, just because we're going to bring it up later, you know, President Biden's barbecue he had for staff members while all of this was happening, he's already called a lid for today, which means we're not going to hear from him today at all.
Yeah.
What do you think the posture, the stance should be of the United States right now and the president?
It should be what Kevin McCarthy uttered this morning in his speech, which weirdly enough, because I don't particularly like Kevin McCarthy all that much as a speaker or a leader, he was outstanding this morning. You take a firm stance. You are clearly on the side of Israel. You will work with them to destroy Hamas. You will support Jews. You will do what you can in order to end this, period. And it should be ended on Israeli terms, not on American terms, and certainly not on Hamas terms.
All right. Jason Rantz, host of the Jason Rantz Show on 770 KTDH, author of the book, What's Killing America. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason, for his perspective on what he saw. And I will say, I actually do believe, and I asked Jason this because I believe it's true, especially in Seattle, but I think Jason, I think Jonathan Cho, if he goes back to another protest, I think they should bring him back with them. That's not labeled. And I think they should ask the people there who are in support of Palestine to point to Jerusalem on a map. I would venture to guess that a lot of them don't know where it is, especially the white ones, as he pointed out, like the far leftists, the progressives who are, you know, just following whatever progressive politicians tell them to do. I guarantee they're just looking for something to protest and they could not point to Jerusalem on a map. Maybe we should do that. If there's one nearby, we're going to go, I'm going to bring a map. I'm not going to label it. And I'm going to ask them to point to it, because I think there's a lot of that happening with people who are all of a sudden experts on Israel-Palestine relations, you know, going back 70 years. So appreciate Jason's perspective. And certainly we're going to be efforting some interviews with, particularly I'd like to see if Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal will come on. She has been criticized in the past for her comments on Israel. And I'm curious to get her response to what's happening now. So this is certainly not the last that we're going to be talking about this as this situation develops. All right, coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about some of the real true ignorance around the public safety crisis in Washington State and how we are seeing the natural result of that ignorance. But first, I've been talking about my friends at First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com. All of Mike and I's insurance is now handled by First Mark. We're so happy to have a local company, to not have to sit online with some big phone tree in some major company. If we have a claim to make, we just call First Mark and they handle all of it for us. It's wonderful. We took the First Mark challenge in the spring. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark, and he said, if you take the First Mark challenge, here's what they hope you take away from it.
One of our goals that we say is that we believe everybody deserves to feel confident about their insurance. And so that's really one of our primary drivers of those conversations is we don't expect you to remember everything we talked about. But we hope that at the end of that process, you're going to feel confident that you have what you need, and also confident that if you have a question, someone's going to pick up the phone and take care of it for you down the road.
Yeah. And I think that's the peace of mind you need. I mean, Mike and I feel like we don't have to worry about our insurance at all. They're handling it. They're going to tell us if we need to update our policies, if we need to renew policies, they're just going to do it for us. I mean, that is true peace of mind. So take the First Mark challenge like Mike and I did. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com, and you'll find out that they truly work for you. All right, denying our public safety crisis is a deadly endeavor. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right, this is a story that was kind of happening while we were taking the week off while I went to see my sister. But you've seen the video by now, I'm sure. So the Seattle Police Department is looking for help from the public to identify a man who, armed with a hammer at a light rail station, attacked two elderly strangers. This story was, I mean, first of all, it's obviously heartbreaking. And I don't know what it is about a hammer. I don't know what it is. I mean, we've seen people tacked all sorts of ways, shot, stabbed, whatever it is. I don't know what it is about the prospect of being beaten with a hammer. This is not the first story we've seen in Seattle of someone who clearly has some mental issues attacking a completely innocent person, or in this case, persons, with a hammer. But this was, oh my gosh, the story was, and we'll show you a little bit of the video just because he's clearly identifiable. I mean, if anybody knows this guy, you can obviously tell who it is. So this is some really good video. But it was two elderly strangers. And one of them was a veteran in a wheelchair. And he actually tried to step in and protect the elderly woman who got attacked with a hammer, even though he was in a wheelchair. I mean, that man is a hero, an absolute hero. His name is Doug Krogel. But so Seattle police looking for this guy. But I just couldn't help but notice, first of all, does it surprise any of you who watch this show, who are, you know, approaching the crime crisis in Seattle with common sense and with an understanding of how bad it is? Does it surprise any of you to hear that, oh, there's concerns over public safety on public transit after those? No. We've been talking about it for a long time. We know that there have been issues with public safety on transit. This has been going on for years. If you've ever stepped foot on a light rail train, if you've ever stepped foot on a bus, I would be shocked if you felt safe on certain routes. I mean, I'm going back to 3 years ago during the pandemic when they weren't enforcing fares because it was racist. It's like, what do you think is the natural result of not enforcing fares, of not having a strict law enforcement or private enforcement effort? And then, of course, you know, we talked about the drug den that buses and light rail stations have become. And then King County absolutely denying that a UW study that found that there was widespread drug contamination on trains and buses was a big deal. But they're like, oh, it's still safe. We're like, 100% of samples that were airborne tested positive for meth. What do you mean it's safe? So we've just been gaslit on how truly bad the safety crisis is on public transportation. Then you have outlets like King 5. This is their headline after this hammer attack story. Safety top of mind for Sound Transit riders and employees after unprovoked hammer attack. You don't say. I mean, we've been saying this for years. What drives me nuts is you know, the denial and the downplaying of what is clear to see when it comes to what has become a truly unbelievable public safety crisis on public transportation. Until what? A guy attacks two elderly people with a hammer, and then we're all like, oh, we need to do something about the public safety crisis on public transportation. It's like, of course you do. We've been saying that for years. It's common sense. They've turned into drug dens. We have a mental health crisis that is completely out of control, and you're acting surprised that some guy, mentally ill man with a hammer, attacked two people? Like, where have you been? And Nicole, did you have something you wanted to say?
Oh, no, I agree with you. I just think that in this, it's King 5 going to, you know, sticking up for Sound Transit, being like, you know, this is their concern now. Right. So just so everybody knows, don't be afraid to ride Sound Transit because they're really worried about you now.
Yeah, finally. And now they're upping security and stuff. And it's like, Okay, security, this is, again,
this
the same
is not
agency
the first attack.
That's like, we're going to pull back. Mm-hmm. Security's not going to, you know, not going to confront people who haven't paid for fares. What kind of environment did you think that was going to foster? What kind of environment have your policies and your position on these things fostered?
I mean,
this isn't even close to the first attack that's happened on light rail and the buses. It's horrible.
And this man is obviously not mentally well. He's wearing a dress, walking around with a hammer, waving it at people, shouting at people in the thing. And this is over a time period. And I'm sure that he got reported prior to the actual attack. And there's nobody around to help. Like, they don't have anybody, any security leading up to this, apparently, because somebody should have stepped in earlier.
Yeah, and then King 5 saying Sound Transit has permanently increased security staffing at 9 of 10 stations. Onboard security has increased 211%.
Oh, well, I hope that the one station that doesn't get security.
I wonder which one that is, right?
Yes.
But again, this is how the government works. Mm-hmm. It's like, once it's so bad that people are dying or people's lives are at risk, then we'll throw everything in the kitchen sink at it. Where it's like, okay, if you had used your brain, common sense, realized, okay, we've got a mental health crisis, we've got a drug crisis, this is obviously going to pour onto public transportation, common sense tells us that, and dealt with it in a meaningful way, in a strict way, taking it seriously from the beginning, you wouldn't have to, on the back end, be increasing security by 211% because it never would have got so bad to begin with. And this is, again, the denial and the apathy that Seattleites have shown. We're going to have another segment on that coming up momentarily. The denial and apathy that Seattleites have shown on the crime crisis. This is the natural result of that, where it gets so bad that now Soundtrounds is like, oh, we got to increase security at 9 of 10 stations and increase onboard security by 211%.
But why isn't the story what led up to the lack of safety provided to these people? Yeah. Because, again, it's just the media kind of playing into like, here's our statement. Just read our statement. Tell people 100%. It's top of mind. And not, hey, this is what led up to all 155 attacks this year. That's... but let's just feel safe when we go anywhere in Seattle and get out of your cars because we want you to be in this situation every
day. 100% right on that, because what it is it's press release reporting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not journalism. It's regurgitation.
Yep.
It's like, oh, hey, somebody got attacked with a hammer. Let's take what Sound Transit says and let's just put that in a story and call it journalism. That's not journalism. Journalism, like you said, being a watchdog of government, which should be the fundamental responsibility of the media, is to go to Sound Transit and say, hey, how did you allow it to get so bad where you have to increase security by 211%? What about this policy? What about these anti-racist policies that led to this, you know, proliferation of people on Sound Transit who haven't paid to be there and haven't paid to be on buses? What about all that? But King 5 won't do that. They're not going to question, you know, anything having to do with race. They're not going to question Sound Transit's decision not to do fare enforcement because it was racist. That's not journalism.
I don't know how it got like this.
Journalism?
Oh, yes.
Or Sound Transit?
No, well, both. I know how Sound Transit got it the way it is because that's politicians. And I just don't understand how journalism has kind of sunk this far, because it really has. And I mean, good journalists like you have been leaving to do other things because you can't be part of that environment anymore. And that's sad too, right?
And there are some good ones. I'm not going to act like there are no good journalists in Seattle. There are a handful... At most of the stations, there at least is one, I would say. But when you have that big of a platform, I mean, I can say, I'm not going to turn this into a segment about the downfall of journalism. Part of it is staffing. There are some elements of it that aren't as nefarious as you might think. Laziness and staffing and young reporters who are getting paid not jack to be there.
Pay is a big thing.
They're turning and burning stories. Sound Transit sends a press release saying it's increasing security. Let's just throw it online. Yep. Let's move on with their lives. They don't have the time. They don't have the energy. They're not being given the time and energy to pursue stories in the way that journalists used to pursue stories. So some of it is just the complete decline of journalism for a variety of reasons. But a lot of it is bias.
I think it's bias. And I also think it's the problem right now with a work ethic. So... I think there's a huge lack of work ethic in the generation that's in this age range, right? Like 20 to even 40. I mean, there's a work ethic problem, and people need to be reminded that there's something you gain from that. Not just money, but you gain like pride, and there's a lot to be gained from a good work ethic. And right now people are just working
like,
to work.
What's the bare minimum I can do?
What's the bare minimum?
When you're doing the bare minimum in a career like journalism, then you belong in a different career. Because the power that journalists have to influence what's happening, to literally save lives, if you had outlets that were down the throat of Sound Transit every step of the way and of our elected leaders in Washington State to tell them, again, for the last 5 years, as this crime crisis has been increasing, do you think if media outlets like King 5 were down the throat of elected leaders, asking them to account for how things got so bad for these stupid, nonsensical policies like defund the police? I mean, since 2020, do you think we'd be in this crisis if the media was doing its job? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. We would not be in this crisis, and voters would be well-informed enough to not vote in the people who are pushing the exact same policies who got us here to begin with. All right, Nicole, thank you.
Yeah.
again, we'll have a segment that I think is very similar in terms of us ignoring, not you, of the powers that be and politicians and the media ignoring these crises for so long that then something really bad happens and now all of a sudden we want to scramble and be like, oh, we got to do something about this. Absolutely ridiculous. The media is a huge, huge part of that. You know, I think I had to do a story that looks at... Remind me this. I'm going to do a blog post at some point this week or next that actually says, here are the good journalists who are doing their jobs. Because as much as we crap on the ones who are just, you know, just flailing through life and should find other careers. Mm-hmm. I think we should give credit to some of the ones who are actually making an effort to do the hard work and hold people accountable. Anyway, that turned into a real media bashing segment. It wasn't intended to be. All right. Can your portfolio survive our current economic uncertainty? If you are just in that process of building toward retirement, planning your future, if you are on the cusp of retirement, you have to visit knowyourriskradio.com, chat with our friends at Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham and their team, because I'll tell you what, he's very blunt with us when he comes on Thursdays, and he's very concerned about the house of cards that our economy has become thanks to quote-unquote Bidenomics, which is just built on printing money. And so he joined the show and talked to us a little bit about their concern of the state of the economy and how they can help you try to navigate it.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also, when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
So can your portfolio survive inflation, and can it survive Bidenomics? Can it keep up with inflation and survive Bidenomics? Visit knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Reach out to Zach Abraham and their team at Bulwark Capital to get some advice about how to move forward, particularly if you're getting close to retirement. I think that would be a very, very wise thing to do. All right. The following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Last week on this segment, we talked about a Fox News segment that had made the rounds on social media, where Fox News sent a correspondent to Seattle to talk to voters about the crime crisis. And at least those who were featured in the video that Fox News put out were Seattleites who pretended as if Seattle was not in the midst of a crime crisis at all.
It's not a thing that happens just on the street. People don't just come up and try to rob people on the street. Do you walk around every day like someone's going to rob me every second?
Yeah. And as I pointed out at the time, that it wasn't cute, it wasn't clever, and it was actually, frankly, quite embarrassing to watch Seattleites, in the name of, I guess, dunking on Fox News, try to downplay what is a very real and very apparent crime crisis on our streets. And I said at the time that that was really the line from that woman in the green coat that stuck with me, is her saying, people don't just walk up to people and rob them on the street. And I thought, yes, they do. It happens all the time. I mean, I thought of Ina Kwan, which wasn't a robbery. It was just a random act of violence, but a pregnant woman in the car with her husband near the business that they own and gets shot and killed for no reason. That was a random attack on the streets. We just talked about earlier on the show, a man going up to two elderly people and beating them with a hammer. So yeah, there have been many, many headlines. These aren't one-offs in Seattle of random people who are just going about their business being attacked. And of course, just a couple days after that Fox News story and some people in Seattle celebrating this woman for putting Fox News in their place by saying, that's not a thing that happens. People don't just go rob people up on the street. There was this really horrible story. And again, are we going to continue to ignore the obvious? Continue to ignore the obvious course of events, what's building up until true tragedies happen? And I guess the answer is yes, because there was a story that almost fits to a T what that woman says is not happening on the streets of Seattle. The headline from Fox 13, I love him a lot wherever he is, family remembers man stabbed to death in downtown Seattle. So you've got this guy and his brother. And it didn't say in the story, but it sounded like perhaps they were immigrants because they'd come to Seattle looking for work. They were planning, hadn't found any really, and they were planning to go to Yakima to look for work there. And they were, of all places, at a bus stop, about to board a bus, when an individual approached them to rob them with the stated intent of robbing them, and ended up stabbing and killing this man, 52-year-old Juan Gonzalez. He was out for a walk with his family. This happened September 29th, was ready to board a bus at 2nd Avenue and Jackson Street. Two men tried to rob him and his brother, demanded money and belongings. Gonzalez refused. The suspect stabbed him several times, according to Fox. And, you know, I also couldn't think about, I mean, this is tragedy no matter who it happens to, but when I think about progressive politicians in Seattle, how they're, you know, so concerned about being a welcoming place for immigrants, which is good. You know, you want to be a welcoming place for immigrants, for legal immigrants, certainly, where they're so concerned about identity politics. And here you have a guy who, again, I'm just reading between the lines, sounds like he was an immigrant to this country, looking for work, looking to make his life better, a person of color, gets stabbed to death trying to board a bus. And then I think my mind flashes back to the woman on Fox News who, you know, Seattleites were applauding for dunking on Fox, saying that doesn't happen. People don't just walk up to you in Seattle and hurt you and try to rob you. Why are you painting it like that, Fox News? Why are you trying to push this right-wing talking point? It's not a right-wing talking point. It's reality. And it has deadly consequences. And now you have a family of this 52-year-old man who's without a dad, who's without a loved one. You want to mock that? You interested in mocking that? You interested in denying that, that things like this happen? I guess I just really struggle with the point. I struggle with the goal of denying the crime crisis in Seattle, denying the crime crisis in Washington State, denying the policies that have got us to this place. Does it make you feel good? Is it just in the name of ideology because the politicians here are of your political persuasion and you simply cannot acknowledge and admit that their policies have led to this, that their policies have led to the death of innocent people, attacks on innocent people? What is it? Are politics and political wins really more important to you than people's lives? Because that's the only thing I can come to is that you are so hyper focused on your political ideology, on attacking the other party, which is virtually non-existent in Washington State, on not admitting fault or wrongdoing, that you'd rather see people die, hear stories of people, innocent people being attacked and killed on our streets, than acknowledge that there needs to be a change of course in Washington State politically. And that is just a really sad and tragic place to be. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure to sign up for their newsletter so you can get notified of opportunities to do just that. Turn your frustration into action. All right, dipping outside of Washington State for a moment. As much as I, you know, have criticisms of the media, and earlier on in the show, we criticized some of the coverage around what's happening in Israel. There has also been some really exceptional reporting happening. And I just wanted to play, you know, a clip. I've always been a Clarissa Ward fan at CNN. She's their chief international correspondent, and she has done some exceptionally brave reporting from war zones. And this is no exception. She went to the area where the Hamas terror attacks kind of originated, where they had come up. There was obviously the music festival, but then there was this long road where I don't know if you've seen the video, but it's cars just riddled with bullets up and down both sides of the road. And so her and her crew had gone there, and then all of a sudden they started hearing missile attacks and the Iron Dome in Israel trying to ward off missile attacks. And she did that live report from a ditch.
Hi, John. So forgive me, I have a slightly unelegant position, but we have just had a massive barrage of rockets coming in here not too far from us. So we have had to take shelter here by the roadside. We're just about 5 minutes away. Gaza is in that direction. We can hear now a lot of jets in the sky. We could also hear the Iron Dome intercepting a number of those rockets as they were whizzing overhead and making impact in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think that some of those really brave journalists who are on the ground deserve all the credit in the world. We're, as I was saying, we're criticizing journalists. I'm not saying everybody needs to be Clarissa Ward, but I do think exceptional journalism is worth calling out. And so I've been watching what she's been showing in the horrendous images. But there's another reason I played that. While Clarissa Ward and CNN were, you know, in a ditch trying to bring the horrors of what's happening there to the American people and to television screens showing extraordinary bravery. Where was the president of the United States? Well, he was having a barbecue at the White House with a band. First of all, when I heard this, I was like, that's not true. That's just like some people spreading misinformation on social media. Because you always have to be careful. We saw this with Ukraine. There is so much misinformation out there that's designed to, you know, really influence public opinion. And I'm like, there's no way he was having a barbecue with music while this was happening on Sunday. Well, he was indeed. According to a White House pool report at the time, at 6 p.m. Eastern time yesterday, what was the president of the United States doing at the White House? It says, in the late afternoon and early evening, a live band could be heard coming from the area around the Rose Garden. Your pool Mueller asked why a band was playing, the White House told him the president and first lady are hosting a barbecue for White House executive resident staff and their families. While people are being murdered by Hamas, while even Americans in Israel are being taken hostage, the president of the United States and the first lady on Sunday felt fit to move forward with a planned barbecue and band. A couple of the tweets criticizing this, Josh Hawley, while Hamas holds Americans hostage, Joe Biden is enjoying a picnic with a live band. Stephen Miller, this is effing infuriating. Americans are dead and being held hostage. Biden went to a barbecue and Blinken is begging Turkey to tell Israel to stand down. I've never seen anything like this ever. Katie Pavlich, conservative voices here, so certainly their criticism might be based in that, but it is entirely valid. While countless Americans are being held hostage in Gaza with attacks on civilians in Israel ongoing, President Biden is hosting a barbecue. I mean, truly embarrassing. Truly embarrassing stuff. And today, I just saw Jackie Heinrich with Fox. So you might think, okay, after that embarrassment, like, oh, we probably shouldn't have moved forward with a barbecue and a band while all this was going on. Well, surely the president would be out, would be at the forefront of things, would be making sure that he was very visible on the international stage. Well, Jackie Heinrich with Fox News says, the White House has called a lid before noon. We do not expect to see or hear from President Biden for the rest of the day. And a lid is, of course, where they're not going to have any sort of press pool availability. They're basically going to be locked behind. And look, that's, you know, if the president is, and I would have said this yesterday, if the president wasn't out speaking to the media and all of this because he was in the Situation Room and he was being briefed by military advisors and all of this and trying to figure out and on the phone with our allies, et cetera, fine. But he's at a barbecue with a band. And so forgive me if they're calling a lid for the rest of the day, and I question whether President Biden will truly be working on this situation and helping our allies, because yesterday he was having a barbecue with a band. Really embarrassing stuff. All right, we're going to get to questions and comments from the stream. Later on, we'll have a sanity check, which is an update to a story I had last week. I'm also going to give you an update. I just got, Nicole, I'll give you the update, too, on my sister's condition. I just got a text from my mom that came through during the live show. But first, I've been talking about Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Somebody asked me in the comments earlier when we had Jason on. Is Jason on the same weight loss plan? Yes, he is. Jason's looking great. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I lost more than 35 pounds before my wedding day. Oh, it felt great to kind of feel like myself again before my big day. I started the program around this time last year. I found it very easy to follow. No prepackaged meals, no drugs, no injections, no crazy workout routines or hypnosis or anything weird like that. They're just teaching you what to eat, the portions to eat it in, and how to continue for the rest of your life in a way where you don't feel like you're on a lifelong diet. And I've heard from so many of you who have had fantastic results. I love to hear those stories. So keep them coming in. So if you're interested in at least talking to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team about whether it's the right program for you, because not every weight loss program is right for every person, just schedule a free 15-minute consultation at EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, let me give you an update on my sister and talk about the last week. And I so appreciate your guys' willingness. You know, I posted yesterday on Patreon Locals that we were going to resume the show today and I was going to come back from Miami. And so many of you were like, Brandy, you stay there. You're just fine. And I do appreciate that. You know, it's hard when you're self-employed and when you're running a business. If you're not working, the business doesn't run. And so, you know, I took a week to be with my sister and family, but she is still, you know, surrounded. My brother came in over the weekend. My mom is there. Her boyfriend has family. And so she has not been alone. But just to kind of update you, so I didn't realize how dire the situation was until we got off the show on Tuesday. Immediately after we were done with the live show last Tuesday, I got a call from my mom, and I really believed after that call that my sister might not make it. And she had, you know, walked in to a hospital in Miami, you know, knowing the symptoms of a severe asthma attack, because as you guys know, she had had one about 7 months earlier, I think back in April, so not quite 7 months, and she had to be hospitalized for it. But they tried, you know, some of the things that worked last time, and she wasn't responding to that. So they had to intubate her. And then at some point, early Monday, she got moved to a bigger hospital with a, you know, some of the best lung doctors in the world. And at the time they were talking about possibly her needing a lung transplant. So it just really devolved quickly. And so I'd been in Miami since Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning. And so my sister has been on a breathing machine since. In the 5 days I was there, not able to speak to her, and she was just heavily sedated on the breathing machine. But throughout the week, we were seeing some small improvements, you know, in her oxygen retention, in her CO2 displacement. I'm not sure if I'm using the correct terms. And then we found out while we were there that she had tested positive for RSV, which is a virus that if you and I get it, we just kind of have the flu. And she had had some flu symptoms before she was hospitalized. So that might have been the cause of the severe asthma attack. And then she also tested positive for pneumonia. So I made the decision not knowing, you know, I felt like Saturday, Sunday that and I hate to, you know, put a jinx on anything, that she was stable and she was improving. And so it was okay for me to leave. She had other family members there. But I really wanted to just her to open her eyes before I left. That would have been huge. And she was trying yesterday. You know, I was squeezing her hand and talking to her and telling her, like, Miranda, just, you know, open your eyes for us. They had been reducing her sedation and she'd kind of try to open them, but you could tell there was really no one there. But I just got a text from my mother. And my mom said that that Miranda, for the first time, squeezed one of her hands when they asked her to squeeze her hands. So she's there.
Yeah.
She's there. She's fighting. They're reducing sedation. The goal is to make sure that she doesn't fight back too hard against the tube, that she can breathe on her own for a little bit before they extubate her. And then the goal is just to, she'll be at the hospital for a while longer. I don't really know what the timeline is for that. That's a very positive development because she had not, until I just heard that from my mother, responded to any sort of simple commands to do anything. So that's good news.
Yes.
That's really good news. And I appreciate, again, all of your guys' thoughts. And then the you know, thing moving forward is to just make sure it doesn't happen again and how to figure out how to do that. And Nicole, you were so sweet last night. I flew in on a red eye and I got back and I was literally the last thing I slept at the studio last night because I wasn't going to drive all the way home. And I'm like, we're gonna do the show in the morning. And so we have a pullout couch at the studio and I was dreading the entire taxi ride from the airport making the pullout. I hate making our pullout couch at the studio because it's just like a train wreck to do it.
All the things to be concerned
I know,
about.
But I was just like, I was exhausted mentally, emotionally, physically. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I just want to go to bed. So I was like, I have to make that freaking couch. I didn't get here. Nicole brought me food, left it in the fridge, left me a sweet little note, and had made the bed for me.
I know.
So I just came in and I
felt very helpless while you were gone.
Oh my
I was
God.
Like, what can I do? What can I do?
But no, and I just slept. That was so nice.
Good.
So I appreciate all you guys. You guys are all wonderful. That's the update. And I'm just getting that update as you guys are getting that update. So I will definitely keep you in the loop. But again, just my
that makes me happy.
Yeah. My appreciation. We'll get Miranda back on the show.
And she knows you were there.
Yeah, we'll get her back on the show and all of that, and she'll be great. But
and you'll go back in a week or two. So
yeah, like, I'll spend my next open weekend down there just checking in and stuff. So
yep.
Love you guys. You truly are awesome. And I just cannot tell you enough how appreciative I am of all of that. Okay, let's get to questions and comments from the show. On Israel, Matthew Cook with a $20 super chat says, the pro-Palestine protests supporting the actions of Hamas are a result in part of our education system. Schools are now teaching Israel as an apartheid state and as an oppressor. It is another leftist narrative being taught. Lolly Wilson, Biden has made America look weak. I mean, I don't disagree with that. I mean, look at Russia and Ukraine, and I wonder if it had been under another president, if Hamas would have been so bold as to do what they did.
It feels like they were given an opening.
Yeah. And I'll also say, when it comes to the situation at the southern border, you know, you might think, well, surely they'd know if Hamas was planning to put terror cells in the United States up through Mexico. The entire international intelligence community did not know that this attack from Hamas was going to be happening. So clearly, it was able to be planned in a way that did not hit the radar of our intelligence community. So you don't think there's a risk that they've also infiltrated the United States and are just lying in wait? Like, I would never rule that out. Weiss Castle says, you can always feel sympathy for civilians, especially children, but to ignore terrorist barbarism is reprehensible. And I agree. And that's kind of it's a very touchy thing to talk about what's happening or what has happened historically with Israel and Palestine. And, you know, I tend to agree with that, though, that yes, I feel, of course, there are a lot of people living on the West Bank, living in Gaza, who have nothing to do with Hamas, who don't support terrorists, who are as probably horrified as we are about what they did and what we've been seeing happening in the rape of women and the murder of children and their parents. And so I think you can feel sympathy, certainly, for those civilians. And Benjamin Netanyahu had said, you need to evacuate Gaza because we're going to basically come in there and level it. Now, whether they had anywhere to evacuate to or what they're going to do, but I think that's a good point. Fawn Spady says, the Seattle Times article this morning was terrible. Everyone can feel sorry about the Palestinians who are put in a terrible situations, but anyone who is energized by the Hamas atrocities are sick. I agree. Dan says, advertising for protesters was $15 an hour, and after three protests, they get a phone. And organizers get a nice used SUV or pickup truck. What is that about?
I don't know. He's saying that there's ads for...
There's advertising for protesters. Can you send them to me if they are?
If you've seen that ad, please send it to me.
All right. On the hammer attack, Crafty Grandma Crispy says, are they going to ban all hammers now? Doubtful. Let me see. Bryce and Cheddar Real Estate says, as Seahawks season ticket holder, I took light rail for years, just bought garage parking for the rest of the season. Unsafe, unreliable, billions well spent, Washington. Taxpayers are so proud. All right. Rob says, people in Seattle are so ignorant to the danger on the streets. The people that live and vote in Seattle are not taking public transit. I think some of them are, but I do think there's this bizarre level of ignorance. And they talk about white privilege. Well, that's what I think of when I see that lady on the Fox News article being like, oh, there's no crime. It's like, oh, well, that's white privilege for you right there. Like, right. Are you living? Where are you living? You know?
And I guess that's what it's full of, right, is that lady. So, right. Like, where are they hanging out all together that we can go talk
it's
to
It's like
them?
A white privilege, white guilt. Like, oh, yeah, defund the police. Not your neighborhood that's going to suffer mm-hmm. from defunding the police. It's South Seattle where there's the highest concentration of people of color who are going to suffer from defunding the police. Mm-hmm. Very woke of you. Quite woke. On Biden, Vicky Berg says, Biden didn't even get out of bed until 7:30 a.m. on the day of the attack. This is what you were saying. Yeah. They woke him. He woke up and they told him about it.
Well, during his press conference, because he has done one press conference about this, right? It was a really quick one, but he said, when I was woke up between 7:30, 8 o'clock and told about this, and then he went on. But the attacks had happened. Many people have pointed out that the attacks started at 11 p.m. the night before. So there's 9 hours that his people did not wake him up.
He didn't wake the president up?
That there's this massive event going on.
Isn't that crazy? You would think that, is it because of his age? Like, where he's, like, on so many sleeping pills that they're, like, we couldn't wake him up if we wanted to? Why would you not wake the president up?
That's wild.
That needs an explanation. I guarantee in the White House press briefing room, Peter Ducey's there. He's going to ask her today.
We'll have to. Yeah, I hope she's doing one. I haven't even seen anything about that. She hasn't done one since this happened either. I don't think she's done one since the 6th, though.
Well, she doesn't. They don't typically do one over the weekend, do they?
But I mean, if there's a major event like this, you would think there'd be something happening.
I need an explanation for why they would not wake the president up.
Right.
I'm guessing it's because of his age. Well. And he's in a deep, deep drug-induced sleep. Mm-hmm. Hey, there's sometimes where I'll take an Advil PM and you're not waking me up for anything. All right. Anyway. Okay. Thank you again for those questions and comments and for
Did you get Matthew's super chat?
Okay. That was the first one I read. Are you not paying attention, Nicole?
No, I was probably pulling the rest of the comments. Yeah. Okay, just making sure. Thanks, Matthew. That was very nice. He doesn't throw that out there very often, $20.
Ooh. Are you calling out Matthew for what, not being generous enough? He's a subscriber.
Him and Matt
gave
have been
us
on
a $20
today.
Super chat.
They're just like making everybody laugh in the comments here. Good. It's like the Matt and Matt show.
We
over
need
here.
Some laughter, so that is very welcome. I certainly need some laughter as well. The world needs some laughter right now. Things are tragic. That's true. Didn't even talk about There was an earthquake. Yeah. My friend Jessamyn, love her. She's so dramatic, though. I'm on the plane last night, and she's like, if they divert your plane, it's because we had an earthquake. And so I'm like, how bad was this earthquake?
Like,
a 4.3
o'clock crumble.
Buildings crumble. Yeah, but hopefully that's not leading up to the big one, because we've had so much bad news lately that I wouldn't, it wouldn't surprise me. So anyway, I hope you guys are I knocked on wood.
It would always surprise us. I don't know.
Yes.
Wouldn't surprise me if that's coming.
Yeah.
But not putting fear into people.
But you need to have a plan in case of an earthquake.
That's true.
Yeah, you need to know what to do. I'd get under this table and I'd cover.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And I'd cry. Yeah. So, all right. Okay, anyway, we're running low on time. Let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, you recall we did a story last week on the show where we talked about Harry the Husker. which is a dumb name for the mascot.
I think it's Husky.
Husky. Oh, I'm University of Nebraska Cornhusker. So Harry the Husky being filmed at a UW event throwing darts at the faces of Supreme Court justices.
Which everyone? This is a big photo op. Go, Harry, go. You got this.
Cheering on, which I said, look, you do you when it comes to free speech, whatever. But at the same time, they would never allow that. It would be on every single news station if you had a mascot throwing a dart at the faces of liberal Supreme Court justices. And this barely got any coverage. So anyway, before I left, we'd reached out to UW. Like, did you see this? Don't you have anything to say about this? And we did get a statement. And I do appreciate them not ignoring us and giving us a statement. So let me read that to you. We are aware of the unfortunate incident involving the Washington mascot, Harry, which was captured on video and circulated on social media. We are disappointed in the behavior portrayed in the video, which is contrary to Harry the Husky's purpose of bringing people together. I agree. These actions do not reflect the values of the UW, and we are taking steps to address this situation and ensure something like this does not happen. And again, I appreciate those sentiments. I agree with them that what he did was not in the spirit of what a school mascot should be about, which is bringing people together. However, I don't necessarily agree that those actions don't reflect the values of the University of Washington or of a lot of college campuses across the country where it has become acceptable to speak a certain way about, to act a certain way toward people with differing political views, specifically conservatives. I think conservatism has been vilified on a lot of college campuses in this country. And so if you want to stop a situation like this from being so acceptable that you could have the faces of conservative justices be set up at an event at the University of Washington and the mascot feel as if it was acceptable, even while being filmed, to throw darts at the faces of those conservative justices, that starts with a mentality that vilifying conservatism is okay on our college campuses and is actively acceptable, when it is most certainly not acceptable to breed that environment on our college campuses. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you again so much from the bottom of my heart. I'll keep you guys updated on how Miranda is doing, but to hear that she was squeezing my mom's hand when asked this morning is such a wonderful update. She'll be back on Florida Report. I'm sure that is the number one priority when Miranda wakes up, is to know when she's going to be back on Florida Report. No, we will obviously give her the time she needs to recover, because I think that recovery is going to take quite a while. All right, we will see you guys back on the live show tomorrow at noon.